a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go, kids. Episode 285. 15 episodes from big episode 300. That is amazing to me. 300. Wow. So I am coming to you from a bunker underneath a center of the new evangelization, hidden somewhere in the Rockies, not unlike NORAD. A little coffee sip there. Yeah, on a snowy day, man, I tell you what, only in Denver, Colorado is it like 73. And then the next day there's like winter advisories and stuff. I think we're only going to get like an inch or so of snow, but it's coming down pretty good in some places. Evidently, I saw one person use the word blizzard. I'm like, okay. I mean, it might be white out for a second or two, but I mean, we're only going to get like an inch or two of snow. It's not exactly a blizzard, but going from 73 one day to measurable snow the next day. Welcome to Denver, Colorado, especially in the spring. Like, we're already starting to get kind of springish weather here where it's like warm, but we get these big snows. Sometimes February, March in Denver is like, we get these huge, sloppy, wet spring snows. I mean, it'll snow a foot and then be 64 degrees the next day. It's just like, it happens all the time. It happens every year. It happened like a couple years ago. We had our Tuesday foot, like if for like 3 weeks in a row, every Tuesday we got a foot of snow. It was just bizarre. And then it would melt off by Thursday night. It was just crazy. All right. So yesterday, if you didn't hear it, I let, Sarah, the quitter, Stacy, come on my show after maybe years. I mean, not years, because I haven't been doing the show for years, but 150 episodes of begging to be on my show. I let her be on the show and she cussed on my show. You didn't hear it because my producer, Jennifer, did some production magic and she just like grabbed that cuss word just the way like she grabs Pokemon, like when she's running around in her Star Wars uniform, just grabbing them Pokemon up. So it's, gosh, it's Thursday and I haven't done a weekend recap yet. So you didn't get a show for a couple of days. And, I'm going to talk a little bit about that in probably the second or third section. Just tumultuous big life stuff. In the words of my friend Joe Chaney, my life has been very, lifey. He used to like to use the adjective lifey. He said that movie was really lifey. So it was a good time this last weekend, you know, it was kind of one of those nights where I kind of like pretended I wasn't old. One of those weekends, like we just stayed up, went out dancing one night, had some folks over, had some drinks, ended up walking down to the Skylark and twirled some girls around. It was fun. The Skylark is like such a fun bar. If you're ever in Denver, Colorado, especially if they have rockabilly playing, which is most of the time, it's a good time. It's one of the last bars where without weirdo kind of like techno grinding on each other or whatever, like real human beings still dance with each other. Like you walk up to a stranger and put your hand out and go, would you like to dance? And they grab your hand and you pick them up and then you dance, you know. It's funny. I was just thinking about this over the weekend. Remember I had that little episode, that little, kind of rumination on the intimacy of travel. You know, how you do things around, you're crammed right up next to someone and you're eating, you're sleeping, you're sitting in silence with them, reading a book. You're doing all these things that would normally be kind of an intimate thing you do when you travel. You know, dances like that too, where you go out to a bar and a person that if you met them in the produce aisle, you wouldn't put your hand out and then, you know, but and starts twirling them around. But in this environment, you you put your hand out and they take your hands, you're clasping hands, you're pulling them kind of close to you. You're putting your hand on their back. You're twirling them around. You're touching people that you don't know, which is kind of like, I think that that's something that's very civil in our society. I think it reminds us that, that other people are people, that they're human, flesh and blood, real people with heartbeats and, you know, intent, you know, just they're human. They're not just a concept, especially in the modern world where we're kind of like, we're either off in our, own place, whether that's in our house or in a coffee house with the screen and the headphones in, you know, and we're just looking at everyone. I think when you sit and you're just looking at everything as a concept on a screen, and then you look out and you see all these other people and you're seeing them the same way you're seeing the things on the screen, you can kind of reduce everybody to these concepts on a screen, right? And things like conversation, dance, these things that cause us to either physically or verbally interact with people on a level that only persons do. You know, I think that's something that we really miss. It's something in our society, we don't do that in public anymore. You know, we don't do that around strangers anymore. Where if you think about like my grandpa growing up, my grandpa spent his entire life, and every generation before him probably spent their entire life, where he never went out to a dance or a ball or something that there wasn't, you know, dancing with a partner. You know, I just think it's civil. I'm getting old. I'm going to go Amish, I think. I'm just going, but then they wouldn't let you dance at all. But somewhere between in a coffee house with my headphones in and Amish is kind of where I'm going to land at when it's all said and done. So speaking of things you learn dancing and hanging out, I had kind of a theme over the weekend where, starting with the conversation happened after the candlelight mass on Thursday night, and then kind of going out, and then a friend of ours came over and hung out on Saturday night, and just about three or four times over the weekend, just by coincidence, we ended up in conversations where there were Catholic men and Catholic women sitting at a table, and we ended up talking about dating and talking about the interaction between the sexes and about, you know, what asking someone out on a date and what women are frustrated by and all that stuff. And it was good. I got a decent insight into kind of the frustration of what's been lost in our society, you know. But it's funny though. There used to be a time when some subtlety, there was enough presupposition that subtlety could be used. And one thing I've noticed, and I know I have a lot of young Catholics who listen to this show, the idea that you have to say the word date or you're not committing is kind of a really new thing. It's weird for me. The idea that I'm going to say to some woman, would you like to go on a date sometime? That just seems so awkward. It's really interesting, but evidently that's like kind of how it has to go down now, because there's been a couple times since I've been in Denver that I've said to a woman, hey, would you like to grab dinner sometime? Or let's get dinner. Or I'd love to take you to dinner or something like that. And then when you get there and you realize that, oh, this wasn't perceived as I was asking her on a date, and I thought I was asking her on a date, right? So it's interesting that there's just all these subtle levels of relationship now that didn't exist before. People hang out. People go do stuff. Men and women who are the same age, a man will have a bunch of friends who are women. They all go eat together by themselves and hang out, and it's not romantic in any way, which, I mean, I think all of us have always had a few of those relationships around, but that can kind of be the norm for some people, it turns out. So it was interesting to get a feel from some of my women friends to just say, you know, no, here's, I mean, look, I mean, if you say X, Y, and Z, this is what we hear. If you say A, B, and C, we don't hear this at all. You have to say, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, that, it was interesting. I'm consistent. I've thought about this before. I've had these conversations before, but coming from different perspectives, in hearing this from different people, from different women, from different perspectives over the course of a weekend, a few conversations, it just kind of came up, you know, it kind of hit home a little bit, you know, and it's funny. The thing that shocked me the most is I was talking to a really beautiful young woman that I'm friends with. And she was saying that she had gone to, a big Catholic college or a small, you know, kind of intensely Catholic college. That narrows it down to like three or four. So that it doesn't matter. It happens at all. And, she said that Catholic guys did not basically ask her out. They wouldn't be forward enough to say, hey, would you go on a date? But guys that weren't from that Catholic world would be like, hey, do you want to go on a date? Let's go out. I want to take you out. So it's interesting. It's like, I don't know. I think that guys are overreacting and girls are overreacting to the hookup culture, and guys are overreacting to kind of like trying to fight the porn and objectification that kind of has characterized the men of our generation. And I think that I want to do a whole show on this sometime. I think my premise is this, and then I'm going to move on. I think that we have reduced the concept of all strong sexual desire to lust. And I don't think that's the case. And I think that's the key to a bunch of our problems. And if we could figure that out, and I think we did it to ourselves. I think that we did it as an overreaction to this hookup culture and porn culture and stuff. But I think we're subtly emasculating our guys and telling them that they're normal feelings that they should have, that they would offer up and would end up getting them into a marriage or lust. I think it's wrong. All right, let's go to the break. And when we get back, I got more up my sleeve. You're listening to The Counterposition.
Let my sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Let me skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. Only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right. So going in the news a little bit here, CPAC is going on. And we talked a little bit about this yesterday when me and Sarah were talking, because it just shocked me that Facebook evidently donated $120,000 to CPAC. CPAC is the big Conservative Political Action Committee. Is that what it stands for, or something? Political Action Conference or something. It's the big conference where all the conservatives go, which is funny because Donald Trump has been aced out of it, and kind of they've distanced themselves from Trump. And now he's president, and the people, and it's kind of like the conservatives, the right has kind of finally embraced this new way of being a Republican or whatever that's coming around. And it's Bannon and Priebus and Mike Pence and the president and Kellyanne Conway, and like all the people from the Trump administration are like playing the huge keynote spots. They axed out Milo Yiannopoulos because of some comments that he made about whatever it was. It's interesting. I'm not going to dive too deep into the Milo thing because it's a pretty supple bunch of stuff. But Milo is a gay guy who has been vocally far right, and kind of played on this shtick of like, I'm super gay and I'm far right. You know, I've been very shocking. He's gotten himself kicked off Twitter by supposedly saying racist things about a black actress and stuff. He's been charged with all kinds of stuff. But most recently, a Joe Rogan podcast surfaced where it was perceived, or at least claimed, and I could see why they would think that after listening to the segment, that he was promoting pedophilia. And it's interesting. this guy was talking about his situation. He was abused by a priest, but he didn't want to say that it was a molestation because he had pursued the priest evidently, in England. This guy, Father Michael, he mentions this guy was, I think he was like 14 when this happened, which is borderline, right? That's where the border switches to what this is called. But it was interesting though. This plays into the, all the numbers and the perceptions in the media of the priest scandal too. That properly speaking is not pedophilia. It's not even properly speaking, just psychologically speaking, they just don't call it that. A 14-year-old boy, at least him himself, he said he was post-pubescent. That's wrong. It's bad, but that's not a little kid. And they're kind of crucifying this dude, which I think he's been absolutely vulgar and absolutely horrible in a million ways. And a thing that... This thing that's in gay culture, which it's a big part of gay culture, don't kid yourself, of this older man and younger guy, you know, even going down into the teens and stuff. That's a part of their like kind of mythos and part of their culture. And no one's ever said a word about it. And it gets defended. And then this guy who's talking about his experience of this happening to him from a priest and justifying why, from his experience of it, he didn't feel like it was a molestation because he felt like he chose it and he pursued the guy. And now they're diving on him and crucifying this guy over this. Whereas if he'd been someone who said those exact same things and had been like every other very, very vocal gay guy seems like, and been far left on his positions, I don't think they would be diving on him and crucifying him the way they are. But then at the same time, man, this is just, there's a quagmire here. There's a quagmire of issues about how you process stuff and how you deal with stuff and how you look back on stuff and whether you can talk about that and all this stuff. And I haven't talked a lot about this on the show, but I had an abuse situation when I was a kid. Once when I was very little, but then also when I was around 12, 13, about just slightly younger than this happened. And, I think it's interesting. That might be a topic of a show sometime. Talk about experience of looking back on and processing things and whether or not your subjective experience of the thing can be kind of spoken of without being judged as your kind of like policy discussion. Especially this guy was like making very dark gallows humor about the whole situation, using lots of vulgarity and stuff. I'm not going to link the podcast, but I don't know. A couple people have asked me what I thought about it. I'm not going to dive deep into the Milo thing. I just don't know what I think about it. There's too many facets to this, but, it's just, anyway, CPAC, Milo got axed by CPAC. It was almost like that they had really loved how shocking he was until it went to this. And then they've kind of cut him off, you know, and the argument was he was promoting something criminal. I don't know if I exactly think that's what was going on there, but I'm going to punt on anything else on the Milo situation. Second in the news. There's a couple things that I'm going to put these two unrelated stories together because I think they are related. So the Trump administration has removed the federal instruction regarding Title IX and whether or not, people who are transgender can use bathrooms in schools based on their gender perception. And, if you listen to the show, you know that I've talked about this in detail, and people are acting like this is, they're using the language about and reducing this issue to the same as, oh, you just said it's okay to not let black people eat at your lunch counter. It's just so absolutely not the same situation at all. But I'm glad, like I have said before, I did not vote for this president. He's doing a bunch of stuff that I am not a fan of. There are a few things that I have seen him do that I am a fan of. This is one of them. We need to nationally come to our senses and go, no, no, we are not going to let some dude who's anatomically a dude we're not going to force, you know, some 15-year-old girl in a high school to go to the bathroom next to or change in like Chicago, that big issue up in Chicago, or change in a locker room in front of or be changed in front of in a locker room with some guy because his internal perception, because he's either mentally ill or emotionally disturbed or he's bought into some kind of cultural agenda, is that his biological sex doesn't match his perceived gender, his self-perceived gender. We're just not going to do that. I'm glad that they had the guts to just stand up and go, no, we're just not going to do that. Stop doing that. I'm a fan of that move. Now, what's the other story? So in good old Fort Collins, Colorado, which I love Fort Collins. I am a giant fan of Fort Collins. Fort Collins is one of my favorite cities in the world. I may end up living in Fort Collins one of these days. Not because of the story I'm about to for the record, I've loved Fort Collins for a long time. No, it's just a killer college town. The downtown is one of the most beautifully laid out downtowns. Actually, downtown Disney is roughly based on downtown Fort Collins. And I've talked on the show about the story of Fort Collins and why it's shaped like it is and the vision that these guys had when they set up the city way back when they were starving and had nobody there and all that. But that's in a story for another time. So in Fort Collins, some women from like the Free the Nipple campaign, like sued the city and said that we should be allowed to walk around topless because men can walk around topless. And if men can show their nipples, then we should be able to show our nipples. And you can't say that's gender discrimination. And the city courts or whatever, the people, the powers that be said, no, you can't, because A, self-evident, B, it would be a distraction to children. It would be possibly injuring the children, and it would be, a distraction to drivers. And they made some arguments, right? Well, a judge has overturned that and put a stay on that. So they've said now in Fort Collins, Colorado, home of Colorado State University, that to be fair, if we're not going to be sexist, if we're not going to be, bigoted, we have to let women walk around in a college town, just topless as all get out. So you can go get a beer, just be standing there getting a beer. You can be with your family, getting a hamburger, and there's three women standing there, no shirt on, and that is now legal and okay. And people are hailing this as gender justice. I mean, so this weird kind of like Manichaean kind of Platonist kind of this insistence on the disregard of the body and the insistence on the disregard of any differences between us and an insistence on the primacy of the internal kind of experience of ourselves over the objective order is just, it's just getting out of hand. So I don't know where we're going. I mean, I'm still having that constant. I mean, almost every day I'm having that feeling I talk about sometimes where I read the news, I look at the world and I go, I am living in the near future dystopian film of my late teens, early 20s. This is a late 80s, early 90s, near future dystopian film. We're living in it right now. So God knows, within 5 years, maybe it'll just be perfectly normal. You'll just go to Starbucks. And by that time, they will have sued and won, and the person selling you your coffee at Starbucks might be topless. Maybe I'll end up having to shut down Calyx after we built a bunch of shops because I'll go to bat and refuse to let people work naked or something. I'm just like, where are we headed? I have no idea. Man, kind of a sexy show today. I didn't mean to do that. All right, you're listening to The Counter Position. I'm your host, Andrew Whalen.
Then how we crave hanging in his dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley. All right, so far we've covered, in addition to weather, dancing with strangers, women needing to hear the word date when they get asked out, and how that's weird because we used to not have to say that. Whether or not you can talk about your experience of abuse out loud without being accused of promoting something illegal, and whether or not it's a gender justice to be able to walk around as a woman topless in a Starbucks. Notice I'm implicating Starbucks in this and stuff. So we're going to move on from all that. And I want to talk about two interesting moments and a frustrating moment in hospitality spaces. So being someone who has an apostolate that helps people use hospitality to create community, and I'm designing spaces and stuff, I'm constantly thinking about the interaction between people in public spaces. That's and how to sculpt that interaction, right? And so the three experiences I had was, I had some sushi last weekend at Sushikatsu, and a lady, and there was three of us sitting at the bar that were not related. We didn't come in together. There was a woman probably in her 30s, an older rich woman with clear, decent amount of plastic surgery and stuff, kind of from that suburban, I've got some money class, buying a gift certificate, drinking, and she decided to get a roll on some Chardonnay. And so she's hanging out, and then me. And so the interaction between those, then another interaction I had at Thump Coffee where, someone just really kind of made me feel at home. Another customer made me feel at home and loaned me something I needed and like really, took care of me as a person, and the third was I had to yet again ask someone not to have a conference call without some kind of like noise suppression, like headphones or something, in the shop this morning. And at the same time, I'm going to talk a little bit about what's going on with Calyx, and I'm having to decide what kind of space we want to build as a prototype and whether or not there's going to be Wi-Fi and laptops and all that stuff, or whether we want to put a stake in the ground and kind of be known as the place where you come for conversation, reading and writing and books and stuff, and try to kind of push back on this modern world. So let me go back to the sushi situation. So I go in, I get some sushi. It's like on Saturday. So I love Sushikatsu. If you're in Denver, I like the location in Greenwood Village. I think it's a little better. There's one in Havana and Aurora too. All you can eat, like $14 for lunch, and it's great sushi. You just order what you want and it keeps coming, and it's super fresh. They go through a ton of fish, so they rotate it so fast, and it's super fresh. I'm a sushi snob. I rarely get all you can eat sushi that I don't think is like crap sushi. This is really good sushi for cheap. So in fact, one of the guys that works there is a friend of mine, and he used to work at Sushi Den, which is like the world famous crazy temple of sushi here in Denver. And he says that they buy all their common kind of fish, like just the normal tuna and yellowtail and all that. They buy the same fish as the high end place. They just don't offer like all the, like the Toro and all that fancy stuff, but they're just basic red tuna you get. It's the same red tuna. I mean, it's like same supplier, same tuna, and it's beautiful stuff. They do a good job. So I go there, I'm getting some sushi. It was really crowded, so I volunteered to sit at the bar, and I like sitting at the bar, especially when my friend's work, and I try to get right in front of him, and usually fun, interesting things, if he has time, comes across the bar for me to try. So I'm sitting there, and this lady comes in to my left, and this kind of a older, probably early 60s, clearly moneyed. You find out later she's a realtor. Got, you know, kind of a suburban lady with just enough plastic surgery to let you know that she's got some money and been trying to keep up, you know. And then this woman sat on the other side of her who was a fairly kind of like working class kind of woman, had kind of a weird eyebrow piercing and stuff. And but three very different cultures, three very different people were all sitting there together side by side eating sushi, right? Well, I eat at this bar pretty frequently. I go in and get sushi on a fairly regular basis. And I 90% of the time, people sit there and stare at their phone and eat their sushi and don't talk to each other. Maybe I usually sit there, kind of read stuff on my phone and chat with the guys making the sushi and joke around with them. Several of them speak Spanish. They're from Mexico. So I end up speaking Spanish with some of the guys in the sushi joint. But this time around, this woman was like, just asked me a couple questions and about what I was getting to eat and how that worked. Cause I obviously knew my way around the menu. And we started talking and she just struck up conversation with me. She put her phone down, started asking me questions, and we talked for a while. And then this woman came in and she sat on the woman's left side and she started talking to her and she kind of purposely brought me into the conversation with them. And we talked for a while and we just had a nice, not super deep, just a nice conversation. But the punchline was, she tried to do it kind of quietly, but we kind of caught her doing it. And she's like, I want to get their meals. And so she paid for our sushi, me and the woman on the other side. So she came in, refused to just be locked behind her phone, had conversation, heard what we were. She works with like counseling, like little kids in a school. I do work with ministry and stuff and like creating spaces and stuff. She just thought that it was both great, wanted to support us. And so she bought our food for us. So I got free sushi and I just walked away going, wow, not so much that I was more impressed by the conversation, but then that was kind of the exclamation point on the conversation was the purchase of the sushi. And so, then it was later that day or maybe the next day I was at Thump Coffee and I went to Thump to work on something and it was super crowded. So I ended up cramming into this bar seat, like on the big tall seats bar facing the espresso machines. And I was kind of, I almost left. I'm kind of uncomfortable sitting in that tight space trying to work, but I needed to work on, what to do with, kind of, I was working on, notes for the board meeting for Calyx. And, I opened up my computer and I realized that I'd used up all the juice and forgot to plug it back in. And I didn't have a charger with me. And I'm obviously just like pissed. I'm just like, dang it. And this beautiful young blonde woman to my left, who I've met somewhere before. I think she's been in my shop here and she introduced herself and her name was Lindsay. So Lindsay says, do I need a charger? What do you have? And she like, I have one. And she pulls out her charger and it matches my computer. And I'm like, oh, she goes, yeah, you can use it. And so, I mean, this woman doesn't know me from Adam. She might remember me. I think I've met her in my shop. So maybe she remembers me as the guy that runs. She didn't say this, but if she looks familiar, and I think that's where I know her from, she might kind of, without saying it, remember me as the guy that has that coffee house inside that grad school for theology. So I'm, you know, maybe I'm an honest dude or whatever. I don't know, but she just gives me this charger and I go off to the corner of the room, plug it in. And there was the only place where there are plugs are people were all sitting around and everyone to stop what they were doing and move their chairs and like offered to help me feed the cord around and just put my computer in the corner charging. And just, it was just a moment where there were always people and some of them based on kind of like their look and the bumper stickers on their laptop stuff. We were clearly on very different ideological sides of the divide, you know, but everyone's like, oh, you know, here's a human person. They need some juice in their laptop. I need to get something done. He needs to get something done. Here, let me stop for a second and help. It was just kind of just that common human kindness. Now, in the process, I looked on my phone and saw a really disappointing email, which kind of sent me into a tailspin. So I ended up being glad I wasn't on my laptop because I needed to sit down and a table opened up. So I left my perch next to Lindsay and went over off in the corner by myself and feverishly wrote in a notebook because I was upset about what I saw in an email. But it was just nice. And I wasn't worried about it. And I kind of stood up and looked to see if my laptop was still there and the, the young lady on the other side of the ideological divide I mentioned earlier, like, looks, sees me looking and kind of looks to her left and kind of gives me a thumbs up, like, no, I got it. Your laptop's fine. I'm watching it, you know, kind of implies that. It's just super, I'm just heartened by simple human interaction from people who maybe, I don't know, if I knew their lives and they knew me, maybe we would really disagree about morals and about politics or something like that. And then in the shop this morning, I had to be in the weird situation of asking someone who I'm friends with, who I care about, who I know we have a ton in common and ideologically when it comes to the big picture of things, Catholicism, politics, all the above. But I had to ask them not to have a conference call in our cafe. And I mean, I had students, it was clearly bothering students. It was bothering people from next door trying to have a work, and they were Skyping with a big conversation. It was interrupting the entire room. And I had to say, hey, could you maybe, you know, take it out? And it's just funny. It just goes to show you that I don't know why, I don't know where I want to take it. It's just, there's people who kind of get that I might love and agree with more than anything, but just don't think the same way about this stuff and don't think about, just get busy and maybe aren't thinking about the others, or just like they're just put in a situation where they don't, this is the only place to have to go or whatever. And then at this, and then you can turn around and be surprised by someone that if I was sitting there on my phone next to this lady with all her plastic surgery and kind of the, what she ordered and the way she was kind of what she was looking at and stuff, I was like, I would have been like, I have nothing in common. I could never kind of have any kind of friendship or any kind of connection with this person. I would just be tempted to just turn her into this concept called rich suburban white lady with a bunch of plastic surgery, probably shallow, probably blah, blah, blah. I just like, I have all these stereotypes, and I ended up a beautiful conversation and a woman voluntarily paid for my sushi. So it just goes to show you that, well, it goes to show you all kinds of things. I'm not sure what it goes to show you. People are people and you're human. Act like them. Let's go to the break. You're listening to The Counter Position.
Then all the colored glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dumb.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, the final lap, the fourth segment. I'm giving some time. I have added my coach who made me run the open mile in high school as a Facebook friend. Evidently he's a state representative now. He has accepted. I'm giving it some time. I don't want it to look like I added him just to get him on the show and confront him about this open mile thing. So I'm just kind of letting it sit. But at some point, I'm going to spring and go, hey, I thought it'd be fun to have you on this show that I do. Cool. And that's where I'm going to drop the hammer and be like, why did you do that? Why did you make the fat guys run the open mile? Why? If you don't listen to the show, you have no idea what I'm talking about. It's a running joke. All right. Final segment, something I want to talk about. I was hoping to get to, I have in my notes here to talk about the new Marvel show on FX, Legion. But I'm not going to get to it. So we'll talk about Legion next time. So interesting things been happening with me and Calix here lately. God is kind of, so the Michigan project you've heard so much about up in Flint is stalled or on hold. I don't know that it'll ever happen, which frustrates the living heck out of me. But now it looks like Shrine Coffee is stalled in Santa Cruz. And I'm not, we're fighting on. We're trying to make it happen. We're trying to do what we need to do, get everyone that needs the information and push on. But this project that we've been working on off and on since 1997, that we've been working on really hard for the last couple years, is stalled. And I was probably going to go out there and we were going to contract manage it. And I was going to move out there for a while and run it. And I had really kind of like gotten. So in the last, I've gotten these ideas of like, I'm going to go and spend some time in Flint and help them launch this, this campus thing. And then that fell apart. And I'm like, well, good. Then I can go do the thing in California. And you know that I'm sorry that didn't happen, but now the conflict with this works out. I can go to California. I can get this open stalled. And this, as a consultant, that's all my active real projects I had going, because I only have time for a couple in addition to the client I'm embedded with in Denver. And so I went from busy to, you know, you've heard me on the show. If you listen to the show, my God, I'm on airplanes all the time going to these clients and working on this stuff. I've been busy, 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 right? And all of a sudden, nothing. I have no active projects. I'm like, okay. And other stuff is kind of possibly clearing out in my life and stuff. And so Mark Gieschek, my friend that I do the over the counter podcast with, he came to the bar and he was like, I think this is good. I think this is sounds to me like God's clearing the decks for something. So the rumblings of, there has been rumblings a couple different times of, a big Catholic media name wanting an on-air show from me and Mark Gieschek and Pia DeSalini. So we did a pilot or two and nothing ever happened with it. And now that conversation has come back up again. So there's a possibility that you may end up, if you're the kind of person that listens to this online stuff, but you also are listening to on-air Catholic radio, you might end up hearing me in a roundtable discussion show with a couple of scholar, better educated, famous people, or at least one famous person. So that should be fun. We'll see what happens. I really love talking with those guys. I really think it's a great, and Mark and I especially really, really, really get along on the air. I wish I could drag him out on this show more often, but he's so busy. But if you like, I would encourage you, you know, all you contrarian, if you're not one of the contrarians, you listen to both, go check out the Over the Counter podcast, especially the last one we did on narrativity. The newest one, I think, is one of our best shows. It was me, Mark, and I have really learned how to talk about interesting concepts on the air in a way that brings out the best of both of us. Good times. So all the stuff has just been cleared out. And, so it happened right before the board meeting that I had. So I had a board meeting for Calyx, my apostolate. I'm assuming if you're listening to the show, you know what Calyx is. We build coffee houses as relational spaces in the Catholic world mostly. So I had a board. So we had our board meeting and we are moving forward with building a prototype in Denver, Colorado. So I have been already out going back to one of my natural activities, which is poking my face in the windows of empty buildings. So we're looking for a building in Denver, Colorado. Hoping to get as close to Denver to DU as possible. I'd like to be in that neighborhood down there between kind of DU and Our Lady of Lourdes and that area. Lots of young adults, lots of students, good support from the Catholic world down in that area. So, I'm warning you in advance, we're going to start fundraising. So you're going to be hearing me pitching my own project in the way that I've pitched some of these other projects in the past. So we're going to build a shop and I'm excited. So now I'm back in that world. So you're going to probably hear a lot of conceptual kind of like segments about what kind of interaction we want to encourage and whether or not to use Wi-Fi and what are we trying to get people to do when they come into a space and, you know, the ideas that I've had about how to lay something out in a way to create some kind of interaction. So there will be a little more of a ministry and hospitality kind of edge to this show at times, which it used to have in the past, but I kind of gotten away from that a little bit. But now I'm having to think about this because I'm not building someone else's vision. This time around, we're going to be working hard. We're going to be raising funds. Also something, the more I do that stuff at going and asking people for money and kind of getting into the mindset and the spirituality of fundraising, I know that that's been very affecting to me in the past, you know? So I'm sure that that's going to come out. It's just interesting though. It's like the things that I saw, I started watching an old, talk by Father Raymond Guransky about hope. And just, he said that he had heard old people say this before, and now he saw that it was true now that he was older, was, that it's good to be around young people all the time because they have hope. They're still looking to the future. They still feel like things can work out. There's still room to course correct and get something going and make something happen. And ultimately, our ultimate hope is a hope in eternal life. And it was interesting. He talked about that exact same experience that I've talked about in the last two or three shows, where you have this moment, and this moment is perfect. Either it's just a brief moment where you're with someone that you love, or it's a great meal, or it's a beautiful piece of music, or it's just a sublime moment in liturgy or something. And you just have this moment, just out, you're outdoors and you're just looking at the mountains and it's a lake or something, I mean, whatever. This is a brief moment where you're like, we long for that eternal life. We say, oh man, I wish this moment could stretch out. I wish this moment could last. I wish I could live in this moment. Yeah. And yet it always ends. It always disappoints, and it always points us forward. And I think you can have two reactions to that, and that's nihilism or hope. And, so why am I talking about that? Because it's interesting. In this environment, in this situation where I've lost quite a bit, you know, even potentially financially, it turned pretty quickly into hope for me. So I started it was a way to kind of clear the decks, and immediately I went back to that thing that I've been longing for and having hope for and looking forward to for over 20 years and started working on it. And when I did that, there was something like home that kind of swallowed up some of the disappointment. And I still have hope for these projects. I think that things will move forward. I just think I see now that we need to build a model. We need to build something that people can come look at and see and go, oh, I get it. I mean, I can say all day long in some document online that, you know, we use the true goods that the unchurched still love to over time earn the right to be heard by leveraging those goods in an experience and conversation and service and hospitality through beauty and justice and wonder to earn the right to be heard over time and leverage that in a relationship and community which is the proper context for evangelization and discipleship. I mean, I can say that over and over again, hopefully more organized than that. But when you come to our shop and you see, oh, I see that attention to detail with making the coffee and answering the questions about how they source coffee and then telling a story about why they set up the bar over here like that unique way. And he's earning, people are going, oh, well, that's really insightful. That's really mindful. Oh, that's really beautiful. I really appreciate how you worried about the person who grew this coffee and what would be best for them and their family. I really appreciate you taking the time to repull that shot. And over time, you earn the right to talk about something more. So at the same time as that, I've been bragging about how I finally have some detachment where, you know, I had the project going in California, the project going in Michigan, possible stuff happening here in Denver already. The Breadbox Media thing that you're listening to right now, other possible media stuff. And I just kind of, you know, I'm kind of okay with any of this going any direction. I'm kind of finally getting some healthy detachment from this stuff and really kind of being like, whatever, God, whatever you want to do. And, it was interesting because after an initial little freak out each time, I have kind of been able to let go of these possibilities. And it's not so much just letting go of the work that was done or letting go of being attached to this outcome. It is more being attached to an outcome. I've been able to let go of that. And that's kind of transferred into kind of a remembering of my first love, you know? So pray for me, pray for Calix, pray for all that. We're out of time. Wow, man, this went fast today. All right, let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. Thanks for coming out.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.